Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
All right, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for November 1st. First Kudzu Vine in a while that we've been doing in the dark, if you will, after the time change. But welcome, Catherine.
Hello, everyone.
And welcome, Tim.
Good evening.
Yes, I'm glad that one of you hid from the police. I don't know if the Atlanta police were chasing Catherine. The Somerville police were chasing Tim, but right before the air, I was sure that they were in one of y'all's driveways. It was so loud.
It was here.
It was the
Atlanta
police.
They took Jerry, but they left me.
Well, that's good to hear. Well, they weren't quick. I mean, you know, what are they talking about? Need more police officers in Atlanta and all these debates. I mean, you know, they weren't that quick. They didn't get a lot done.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of the Atlanta mayor's race, it has just been the topic in Georgia, at least. I mean, we'll get to some other states with lots of news, too. But in Atlanta, and really throughout the state, the Atlanta mayor's race is front and center. And that's because the state party got involved this past week. I tell you what, Catherine, since you are the Atlanta resident, we'll let you set this thing up.
Well, apparently the state party felt like they needed to somehow communicate to the voters that they believe that Mary Norwood is a Republican. It is a non-partisan race. It has been for, I don't know how long. We were actually trying to figure out how long it has been. So they sent out a mailer, which I actually got. We actually got, there were two of them, touting that, you know, Mary had voted for Republicans and that she really was a Republican, closeted Republican. I can't remember all the language that they used. And it caused quite a hubbub, as we might imagine. First of all, I think those of us who are familiar with the state party were a little, some of us were concerned about the use of the funds because it had to be expensive. They're giant postcards. I don't know what the mailing list was, but it had to be a pretty expensive undertaking. And, you know, we always hear about how the party's struggling for money. So that's one thing. It is a nonpartisan race. But that doesn't mean that, you know, we can't ask whether you're a Democrat or Republican. I mean, that's one of the things that has been a little troubling to me. You know, I know who the Democrats are who are running, and so I've selected a candidate who's a Democrat. I know he's a Democrat. I think it's a legitimate thing to find out about a candidate. I don't think that it's necessarily in the purview of the State Party of Georgia, Democratic Party of Georgia, to make that decision. But there's been a lot of talk, a lot of upset, you know, Democrats who are supporting Mary Norwood, and Mary Norwood is pretty upset about it. She's, you know, put on TV commercials saying she is a Democrat. She voted for John Kerry. She voted for Al Gore. She voted for Bill Clinton. You know, she did say she voted for the short guy with the posters.
Ross Perot. Yeah,
So I'm upset about it because I think that there's other candidates in the race that are not Democrats, not pure Democrats either, and I'm sorry that they picked Mary Norwood out from the bunch.
Well, I mean that probably has something to do with front runner status, but I will say this: one thing is sometimes when you explain yourself, you kind of dig a deeper hole. To me, the most damning line in this whole thing, I've seen the mail pieces online. I, of course, don't get them. If they're sending mail pieces to Rome, Georgia, we're in trouble for Atlanta mayor's races. But when she did her response, she goes, "Yes, I even went to the Republican convention, but it turned me so far off, I didn't go to either party's convention." I'm sitting here going, well, I don't need to go to the Republican convention to know that I wouldn't like it. I mean, come on, that's like, you know, I've never tried Brussels sprout soup, but I'm pretty sure from Brussels sprouts, it wouldn't be any good to me. But, I mean, it's just, I was kind of surprised by that. And then when you add into it that, you know, she said, and I didn't go to either party. It's like, I know if I didn't like the Republicans, the Democratic convention, it would be just the same. Now, that said, I do think there are some pitfalls for the Democratic Party of Georgia getting involved. I think, one, the money, you said, since we're in such financial straits at times, that is problematic. But secondly, something nobody's mentioned is, tactically, I can just see it. If Mary Norwood wins, it'll be a decent shot of that. I mean, your Republicans are just going to have a field day with this. They're going to say, the Democratic Party of Georgia is so weak, they can't even elect the mayor of Atlanta. It will be a laughing stock.
Well, and also it will not help our strategic negotiations with the city. You know, if we want strong Democrats representing, you know, being hired and working in the city, we're not going to get them, you know.
Oh, yes, she may not want to play ball. She may be ticked off, and I can see where she'd be ticked off of the party at least after this. Tim, your thoughts?
Well, look, in my heart of hearts, if you put a gun in my head, I'm going to say Mary Norwood is, I don't believe she's a Republican. That being said, I think that the Democratic Party of Georgia should have stayed out of this race. This is a nonpartisan race. I know that at the local level, our party takes no side, issues no statement, offers absolutely no assistance to any candidate in nonpartisan races. It is a violation of our bylaws to do so. I know that Norwood hurt herself a bit, especially when she stumbled over the questions about, you know, who she had voted for instance, in the presidential election, in her attendance at convention. But come on, Democratic Party of Georgia, that mailer was just something that shouldn't have happened, David. They should have stayed out of this. I'm bitterly disappointed in the Democratic Party of Georgia for even getting involved in this race at all, and I think they've made themselves pretty much a laughing stock by getting involved.
Oh yeah, we're
well,
going to
the other piece of this that I think is disappointing is that if they really wanted to have an impact on the election, they should have started this 18 months ago or a year ago after the 2008 election and said, okay, we have this mayor's race coming up in Atlanta. We should organize the precincts. We should really work to get our Democrats motivated to support our Democratic candidates, you know, sort of till the fields so that our Democratic candidates, whoever they might be, have a lively and engaged electorate to seek in the various precincts. Instead
but they've probably been doing the grassroots organizing.
They have not.
The Obama campaign probably handed them all that. Just to preview, later on at 7:20, we're going to have our special guest, Asha Jackson, on. Just wanted to throw that in since I neglected to do that at the top of the show. We're going to talk more about this mayor's race. One thing I noticed was real interesting. On the piece that he says, vote for and list three candidates. And one of the three candidates, Lisa Borders, actually gave money two different times to Johnny Isaacson, a candidate we're going to work to defeat. Now, in some ways, it seems like she deserves the same attacks that Mary Norwood's getting. And basically, I think if you are looking for the most true Democrat, it's the one that actually has Democrat by his name for state senator. But why do you think, Catherine, they chose not to highlight Lisa Borders' donations to Johnny Isaacson? I know Bernita did it on Blog for Democracy.
I think it was me.
It was you. Okay. I mean,
and I'll tell you something. I was ready to give that up because I knew about it back in 2004. I actually asked her about it at one point when I saw her at a fundraiser for John Kerry, and she gave me some answer, you know, whatever. And I was willing to forget about that. But then when I searched the disclosures again this week, And I found that additional $500 that she gave in 2006 when he wasn't even running. I mean, he wasn't even running. And she donated money to his campaign. So you just have to wonder what's the connection between Lisa Borders and Johnny Isaacson, and why, I don't know why they didn't bring that up. That's what I was sort of alluding to earlier, is if you're going to call somebody out, you should call them both out.
Guys, let me throw this question in then. Does that not make it look like the Democratic Party of Georgia targeted only the supposed front runner?
Yeah.
I mean, it does. I mean, it's just such a strange attack at a strange time.
Well, and then the other thing that happened before this was that Shirley Franklin went on the AJC blog and like said that Mary didn't have the competence I can't remember the language she used, but Shirley Franklin herself posted comments on the blog there.
Yeah, well, but that's a totally different deal than the Democratic Party of Georgia doing it. I mean, Shirley Franklin, I mean, I would expect her to help Kasim Reed to win, and seeing that he did so much to help her win when he was her campaign manager. I mean, you'd almost dislike her for disloyalty if she didn't support him. I see that as very differently. But I have to wonder, who is pushing this at the party? I mean, I just have a funny feeling that Jane Kidd just didn't wake up one morning and say, let's take this on. I don't know if Matt Wyatt said it, let's just take this on. I mean, they okayed it, and, you know, whatever repercussions happen of this, they're going to have to answer for. But what's the impetus for this?
I don't know.
Well, let me ask another question then. How would they all have reacted if the Republican Party of Georgia had jumped in and sent out some mailer against one of the candidates in the mayor's race and targeted them? They'd have been screaming bloody murder, isn't that right?
Well, I mean, honestly, if the Republicans would have said, Kasim Reed's a good Democrat, I don't know that anybody would have been surprised.
I don't believe they'd have called him a good Democrat, but it's, it's a nice
well, you know what I mean. You know what I mean.
Analogous-wise,
because Lisa Borders, I guess they could have talked about her duplicity and nature doing both, but then I don't know if there's a good hit there. Obviously,
Atlanta's
a Democratic city.
David, I just can't get past the fact that a partisan political party, statewide party, would inject themselves in a high-profile, nonpartisan race on the eve of the election in this manner. I think it's tacky. I think it's low rent. And like I said, I'm bitterly disappointed that they would do it, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. It was not well organized. And by the way, I did look to see if on the Georgia Republican website there's anything about the mayor's race. There's not. There's some type of dinner with Peggy Noonan. Oh, boy. That costs more than the price of the food. It just doesn't surprise. There was no angle for them to get involved in that part of the race.
Right.
See, once again, that lets them save their resources. I mean, they couldn't have asked for a much better outcome for the Atlanta mayor's race for the Georgia Democratic Party to have to spend their money getting involved. I mean,
that's another thing that Catherine mentioned. It's not like we have all the resources in the world, and to throw them out on this mailer like this, as a county chair, I really don't care for this at all.
I mean, yeah, it's pretty vexing. Man, we know at times, they do get involved with judicial races. But you kind of get, because the Republicans have gotten big at getting involved with judicial races.
Well, it would be one thing if they helped Kasim in some way or but to do this hit piece on Mary Norwood, I think is the part that bothers
Amen.
Me.
Amen.
Yeah, but I will say this. I will say this in defense of hit pieces. I've heard this gosh, nearly 10 years ago working in politics. I mean, probably knew it already, but I heard it, you know, says, you know, crystallized in this form. If somebody's over 50, and I don't think she's over 50 at this exact moment, she's flirting with it, I guess, but if somebody's over 50, before you can beat them, you have to drag them under 50. Now, unfortunately, the way to drag people under 50 is you've got to pull them down with something negative. Now, I mean, you know, obviously...
Okay, well, this wasn't really that negative, though.
How would you say?
I mean, I just don't think it was that sophisticated to be that negative.
Well, and to partisans, and, you know, we're partisans, calling somebody Republican, I mean, there's, you could call people four-letter words and it wouldn't be as damning.
Yeah, well, that's true.
I mean,
I see Catherine's angle there, David, and that brings another question to mind immediately. Don't you think this served no purpose except to make the Democratic Party of Georgia look comical? Don't you think the conservative blogosphere is having a grand old time with this?
Oh, well, I love the fact that it was one of the Peach Pundit posters that talked about how, you know, it's basically the Democratic Party of Georgia, and they included Jane Kidd on this, hates white people, and that's why they're doing it. And I happen to see that the Drudge Report is picked up on Mary Norwood doing well, and, of course, white woman wins. And then, of course, you read the Washington Times, the story it's linked to, and it's this major... deal, and it's all racial politics. It's so funny. A lot of these conservative folks, they love to, you know, criticize minority, what they call race peddlers. And at times, I mean, they may be right in saying that there's race peddling going on one way. But then when you see their critiques, all they're doing is race peddling. It's just such a joke, both ways. And I do look on the Democratic Party of Georgia's website. I don't see... anything listed about the mayor's race in any way, not even just go out and vote, here are the candidates, or here are the candidates we think are okay. Because I think in some situations they do have where they, you know, like the Democratic Party might give its seal of approval, and it might say, hey, these two or three candidates in our mind are just Democrats. I mean, to me, that would be a safer thing to do.
Well, let me ask another question, since I'm the question asker tonight, and I want to really throw this at Catherine because she's on the ground down there. Will any of this impact what happens at the polls Tuesday?
Well, I think that it's going to be a runoff between Kasim and Mary Norwood. That's my, I mean, I know we're going to do predictions later, but. And I think this might, I really can't tell. I think it might have helped Mary a little bit and maybe helped Kasim too. I don't think it helped Lisa. I think Lisa's the one who sort of got thrown out in this transaction. She's just, you know, she wasn't really, even though she was listed on the flyer, I think she's been, you know, she's coming up now saying, I'm not interested in all this divisive partisan politics, you know. But I think it probably helped Kasim and Mary probably in about equal amounts. I don't think it is going to make it. I don't know. I'm bad at this.
Yeah, we'll make our predictions later, but I'll tell you this. Lisa Borders, I have a feeling all she better be interested in is the bronze medal because that's where I see her. But it's 7:20, and we had promised that we would bring on our guest running for state representative in, I believe, the 58th district, Ms. Asha Jackson. Asha, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, well, thank you for joining us on the show. You're on here, myself, David, Tim, and Catherine. But what we usually do when folks come on to the Cosby Vine is we first let you tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Thanks for having me again. My name is Asha Jackson. I'm running for State House District 58. That district is over in the East Atlanta area and encompasses Cabbage Town, Reynolds Town, Wormwood Park, Chosewood Park, Glenwood Park, East Atlanta, and East Atlanta Village, all the way over to Gresham Park. So it's a very vast district. I actually grew up here in Atlanta, Georgia, went away to college to the University of Rochester in upstate New York, and then to law school at Tulane University in New Orleans, Louisiana. And I have been back here in Atlanta. I'm a partner at my law firm and have been practicing as a civil litigator for going on 9 years and working and serving in the community. I am the founder of the Atlanta Urban League Young Professionals and a proud member of the Planned Parenthood Board of Georgia, among other activities and boards and organizations. So I'm just happy to be able to run and serve the citizens in my district.
Yes, and this is a special election, if I understand correctly. Tell us kind of when that opened up, when you decided to run, and then when this election actually happens and what the procedures are.
Sure. The seat was previously held by Robin Shipp, and she resigned at the end of May, and the governor signed a writ eventually in September. And so that's when the seat opened up. I decided pretty much when Robin resigned that I wanted to run for the seat and started, you know, speaking to members of the community and friends and family members, and I've been knocking doors and making phone calls ever since.
Yes. Well, before I pass it around to Catherine and Tim, I did want to tell you, in some ways I kind of feel close to that district. My father and aunt grew up on Emerson Avenue in Ormwood Park.
Oh, wow.
Which you said was in your district, and my grandmother lived there until she went into a nursing, well, actually a retirement home first in the 90s. So I've been on Ormwood Park many a day.
Right.
Near Annie West Elementary, I believe, was like, oh, gosh, 100 yards from the house.
Wow, yeah.
So know that district to a point. Well, I'm going to pass it around to Catherine first. Catherine, questions for Asha.
Thank you very much for being with us this evening. I know it's a busy next few days for you, so we really appreciate you taking the time out. I like to ask candidates a little bit of a strange question, but I hope you will work with me on it. I like
okay.
to ask, if you are elected 2 years from now when it's time for you to run for re-election, what would you like to be able to tell the voters in your district you have accomplished in those 2 years? What are the things that you're going to be most proud of after you've served for your first term?
Well, actually, if I win this election on Tuesday, I'll...
Oh, that's
right,
you're going to have to run again.
Okay. Right.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, so in this upcoming legislative session, what do you anticipate are the things that you're going to be working on that you'll be able to report back to the electorate when you run again next year?
Okay. Well, what I hope to be able to report to my electorate is that they are an informed electorate, and actually they will be reporting that back to me because I do feel like there's an information gap in terms of, you know, legislation that is coming down the pike. I think that people in our district, first and foremost, are not really aware of what state representatives do. As I've gone along the campaign trail, it kind of all blends together for people because they just want to feel safe in their homes, they want jobs, you know, and they want their kids to have a quality education. So first and foremost, my biggest task, and I think actually one of the easiest ones, will be to set up a process by which there is a very transparent way for me to communicate information to my constituents and for them to in turn feel free to come and bring their issues to me. And I plan to do that by being one of the first legislators. I'm not sure if there are any others who has a constituent office in the district. And I think it's important so that people can come and learn what we're doing down at the Capitol and so that they can bring their issues to me. I feel like I'm the candidate that has a pulse on the community, and I want to make sure that I continue to do that. Secondly, as a new legislator, it's my hope to get in to the Capitol and to sort of see what the Democratic agenda is in full, look at the budget, and then try to pare that down to the real workable issues that we can get some resolution to immediately. I have some specific legislative ideas. Some are short-term and some are long-term, but it's my hope that, you know, first and foremost, within a very short period of about a year, that I'm able to get a really good grasp on, you know, transportation issues that we'd be working on, you know, issues with respect to health care, impeach care, making it accessible to all kids, and then working on, you know, bringing more jobs to my district. So those are the things that I immediately want to work on for my community.
Okay. Tim, I'm going to let you go ahead because I'm, you know, I have this cough, and I'm not sure how long it's
going to take to talk. Okay. Good evening, Ms. Jackson. How are you?
Thanks. I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. I noticed on your website that you are not a huge fan, and neither are any of us, by the way, here, of the No Child Left Behind Act. And, of course, education takes up such a large part of the state budget. So do you think that the No Child Left Behind Act should be scrapped? And if so, what would you like to see it replaced with?
Well, I'm not a fan of No Child Left Behind because I don't think it works, but I am a product of Atlanta Public Schools, and I know that a comprehensive educational program does work because I've seen what I've been able to do, and I've seen what many of my classmates who are, you know, living in the city and working and serving in the city are doing, and I know the investment that the teachers made in us. And so, you know, I would like to see more of a collaborative type of learning situation. I've talked about this on the campaign trail with respect to, you know, investing more resources into ensuring that our kids have the best technology that they can have. I think because I go back and volunteer at elementary schools and middle schools and high schools, I see that kids are much more hands-on, that they don't learn the same ways that we did, that perhaps, you know, curriculums as we knew them are not the best solution for kids. We need to be preparing them to compete globally. And so I've talked to my neighbors and colleagues, some of whom are retired or some of whom serve in the community, some of who are corporate executives, and I've asked them what would allow you to be able to come back into the classroom to impart your knowledge and your wisdom in kids to help them learn outside of the traditional classroom model. And that's a very important initiative that I'd like to see. I understand there has to be testing and evaluation of children, and there must be, evaluation of in the classroom of teachers and performance evaluations. But I just think that with a little bit more community collaboration, even perhaps corporate collaboration, we might be able to keep kids interested, get their test scores up, and have better results at the end of the day in terms of reaching out to kids who might otherwise not be able to perform under traditional curriculum.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and one more issue I wanted to go over with you about, especially one that would be important to you in the area that you're in, and that's transportation. I was wondering if you felt that the state should invest resources into a further expansion of the MARTA system into outlying areas. Do you believe that that would help your area?
Well, I definitely think it will help the area. I think, there's been talk about whether MARTA needs to be run statewide or whether MARTA, you know, needs to be part of a more enhanced regional transportation system. And at the end of the day, I think we all agree that we need a better public transportation system and one that would allow us to be able to provide that resource to people, you know, so that we can, attract businesses and attract employers to the state. And so I think I would be in favor of allocating more resources to the expansion of a public transportation system. I'm still having discussions with people about what that system needs to look like, but certainly I think there needs to be an expansion of what we already have because it's not convenient. It's not servicing the people that need to be serviced so that they can get to their jobs every day. And furthermore, for us to be a major city and a major player going forward, we just have to invest time and resources and strategic planning into the development of a better public transportation system beyond MARTA and perhaps beyond the metro area.
Excellent answer. And I'm going to ask you one more question, then I'm going to throw it back to David. And it's about Tuesday itself. You know, normally in a special election like this, in an odd year, you might worry about turnout. But into the mix is one of the most high-profile mayoral races in the United States. the same day. And you've been on the ground campaigning for some time. What is your sense about strength of the turnout this coming week?
You know, I can only hope that people will turn out. My district is in both Fulton and DeKalb County, and so you're right. You know, even as we strategize and figure out, you know, who we think will turn out the vote, I can tell you people are definitely concerned about this mayor's race. And so it's my hope that the reverse will happen of what everyone is thinking, that people will be so concerned that people will continue to have conversations right up to the voting booth, but that ultimately they will pick a leader who has a vision for our city, who's going to position our city to continue to be the major player that it can be. And I hope that voter turnout will be humongous and that it will prove everybody wrong, that people will turn out. And my sense is from talking to people that, you know, perhaps they may not know which candidate they want to vote for right now, but they'll work it out sometime between now and when they walk up to the voting booth on Tuesday.
Okay, thank you. David?
Yes, well, I had a question. It's based on what I think will happen at the national level and how it'll affect the states, including the state legislature here in Georgia. I believe that there will be a health care program brought in, and it'll have a public option, but there'll be an opt-out model. I mean, I actually think it's turned enough, it won't be an opt-in, it'll be an opt-out. But, of course, the many Georgia Republicans are going to want to immediately opt out. What would you do in the state legislature? I should say, would you want to fight to keep Georgia as a part of that national health care system?
Well, I definitely think there needs to be a public option, and I definitely plan to be part of the fight to keep Georgia part of that public option, because I, like you, believe that there will be one. And, you know, I think the people have spoken, and, you know, the more that you hear from the people around the country and the people in Georgia, they all think that health care shouldn't take up this much of our time. It is obvious that people should have access to health care in this country. And so at the end of the day, regardless of the fight on the legislative floor, I think that ultimately people's constituencies will speak up and the people will speak, and there will be a health care option, public health care option here in Georgia.
Oh, yes. Okay, well, go ahead and tell us what kind of activities have you been participating as part of the campaign in your district?
Well, are you deeming in terms of my campaigning?
Yes, what kind of campaigning you been doing, where, and what's been going on?
Sure. Well, you know, the People for Asha Jackson has a lot going on. As I told you at the beginning of the conversation, we have been knocking doors since Robin Shipp resigned. We have knocked doors since in DeKalb County and in Fulton County, and probably some of those doors more than once. We have called people on the phone. I know folks don't love robocalls, but we've made robocalls. I even had some folks telling me yesterday when they were trick-or-treating that they'd heard the message and wondered how many more I was planning to send out. And so I believe our message is strong and it's getting out. We had a Halloween campaign ride scheduled for yesterday, 17 mountain bike riders dressed in costume ready to go, and they got rained out at 9 a.m. yesterday, but the train kept rolling. You know, we met our supporters in Cabbage Town and in Reynolds Town, and, you know, even through today we have been knocking doors and talking to folks. And then ultimately we may have a little surprise on Election Day that I don't want to reveal, but I think our message is strong. I think I've reached the people. I've mailed 3 cycles of mail to folks, and I'm just looking forward to meeting them at the polls on Tuesday.
Yes, okay. Well, that's good to know what's going on. And maybe if we don't hear in the news media or the blogs or whatever, you can send us an email or something to tell us what happened on Tuesday so
sure.
We can discuss it if we need to. But now tell us, now, there's how many candidates in the race?
There are 5 total candidates who have qualified to run in this race.
And all Democrats, or you have to actually, you run as nonpartisan now, is that correct? Or all on one ballot, but you designate party.
That's correct. There are four designated Republicans. I'm sorry, four designated Democrats, and I am one of them. And there's one candidate who is running as an independent candidate.
Yes. And if one of you does not get 50, then you have to, the top two vote getters then go to the next election. And when would that be?
That next election will be December 1st, but we're hoping that we don't get there.
Okay, well, we're going to have to keep up. And I know yours is not the only special election state house race. If I'm not mistaken, there's one in Middle Georgia and there's one in Clayton County. So,
yeah.
And I think those have gotten lost underneath the municipal elections.
I think you're right, and I'm not sure why that is, but there is a Democrat running out in Clayton County in that race. And then you have the special election to fill Kasim Reed's Senate seat, which is District 35. So I'd be on the lookout for that race as well. That one is going to turn out to be very interesting.
So really a lot of the state legislature is going to get 40 members possibly either Tuesday or December 1st. Well, I tell you what, we're going to give you something else besides all this free airtime. I would tell you, as a part of your election strategy, I have a feeling those Atlanta voters are going to come out no matter what. But if you had to really work to get out the vote and really pulling your supporters out, that DeKalb area is going to be where to look to make sure your people come out in DeKalb. That's just
a free
little piece of thought.
I think you're right about that, and I thank you for confirming what I think we thought.
Yep. Well, Asha, thanks for coming on the Kudzu Vine, and we'll look for the results, and should it be that you're still alive Wednesday but not finished with the job, we may have you on again.
All right. Well, I welcome the opportunity. You know, please feel free to visit my website at ashajackson.com or call us at the campaign headquarters at 404-329-4545. We're there working round the clock and would love to speak to you.
Thank you again.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. Well, it was good to have Asha on, and I think, Tim, I think you're right, very knowledgeable on the issues, and it's always good to have guests. And I wanted to make sure we had, you know, it's one of these candidates from these races, because there's just been so many, and we've done very little discussion of them, and that's a little bit of us dropping the ball, if you will. But, you know, we cover politics throughout the South, so it's hard to get to all of them all the time. But I guess kind of moving around the South, let's do that a little bit. And in Texas, there were some endorsements that came up, and Dick Cheney resurfaced himself, and he has endorsed Kay Bailey Hutchinson.
Oh, really?
And so that would be big news. But then also, Haley Barbour, the former head of the Republican National Committee, he endorsed incumbent Rick Perry. I guess him being a governor and him serving on the Republican Governors Association and just the Governors Association, maybe I guess he's found ties to Perry. But, you know, each side, I guess, got a big heavy hitter, if you will. I mean, I know Dick Cheney's from Wyoming, even though he likes to play a Texan just before Election Day. How big the impact do you think those endorsements are going to have, Tim?
Well, I think they're going to have significant impact, especially the vice president's endorsement, because no longer can the more right-wing element of the party say, well, Kay Bailey Hutchinson is not being supported by conservatives. Are they going to doubt Dick Cheney's conservative credentials? Is that what they're going to tell me?
Oh, yeah.
The blogosphere is not real happy with the vice president.
Yeah, and the fact that another key point there is, like, you know, a lot of times, you know, particularly in Republican primaries, female candidates, are they tough enough? The meanest man in the world endorsed them. I mean,
yeah.
Hey, her mean credentials are pretty up, too. But
yeah.
Which parts of the blogosphere are, what are they saying, Tim?
Well, they're pretty much bewildered by this. They don't understand why the vice president did it. Most of the blogosphere is supporting Governor Perry. He made a friend of him for life with that teabagger nonsense of his, and let's secede and all of that. And they, a lot of them consider, of course, Senator Hutchinson to be their favorite word, rhino. But they're bewildered about this, but I tell you what, they've stopped short of just trashing Dick Cheney. they're not doing that. They just really don't know what to do with this.
Oh, get real. They can't trash.
No, they
you know,
can't trash.
Dick
no, they're not going to trash him after they've spent 8 years bragging on him. You know?
Yeah, I mean, like, really, if they had a contest of, like, who's the most Republican, and you had Cheney and Rove and Limbaugh and George W. Bush, I mean, I kind of think Dick Cheney would hang right in there with him. I mean,
right.
Winning that contest. I mean, he is
right.
The core of what Republican is. Catherine, your thoughts?
Well, I just wonder if I think it's kind of interesting. Do you think it might be a sort of one of those left-handed compliments, you know, oh, yeah, I'll endorse Kay Bailey Hutchinson, and then, you know, all the people who hate me will vote for Rick Perry.
Yeah, but I will say this. I don't think
I don't know.
This
might be a little more, you know.
Yeah, I mean, do you remember in 2002, Lukovich had a cartoon about Zell Miller, about how he was endorsing everything, and he was like, that's a good rock. I endorse that rock. And, you know, it's just. It was just talking about endorses everything. Dick Cheney, as many things I will say about him, I don't think he's not like a publicity hound that's looking for all this. You know, like Sarah Palin, I mean, you know, she's endorsing everybody everywhere. Tim Pawlenty, he's getting involved. At times Huckabee will do this, although we'll talk later about where he didn't. But, I mean, I just get the sense that Dick Cheney doesn't do this all the time. And, I mean, we all know he's a Texas citizen. I think I actually got it wrong. I should have said he was a Texan masquerading as a Wyoming citizen, but nevertheless, I mean, you know, so I mean, I guess it is his state, if you will, where a lot of his oil industry business happens, so he's got to be pretty involved in that. But I guess switching gears, going to another race to me that just keeps getting more and more intriguing, and that's the Florida Senate race. And about three things happened in that race this week. One, there's another poll showing Charlie Crist is in trouble. His approval ratings in the low 40s, another confirmation that, you know, the shine is off of Charlie Crist. But then he actually showed, I guess you might say, a little bit of fear. It was launched this week, Truth About Rubio. And by the way, that site was up earlier today, and it's been up for a while, and it just went down. They protected the blog, so I'm reporting to you something that apparently has just changed. But this site, not very well done, but it talked about all the negatives about Rubio. Tim, were you surprised in that move?
Not really. I think Crist is getting a little worried. I found it interesting that on that site that they were kissing up to Red State. I had news for Governor Crist. He's not going to find too many friends on Red State. That bunch is largely going to support Marco Rubio, but, you know, because to them, Rubio's a red meat kind of guy. This morning, interestingly enough, David, George Will, he didn't bat an eye either. He said that Rubio will easily beat Crist in the primary, and the reason is the makeup of the primary voter. Crist would easily be the better general election candidate. The problem is he ain't going to be able to get out of the primary. Will mentioned all of these county conventions and Republican meetings down there, and they keep having these straw votes, and Rubio is just killing him. Well, these are the people that are going to show up and vote in that primary. So regardless of what these polls are saying that are showing Crist still with a comfortable lead, so I think he's in a little bit of trouble.
I'll tell you one thing. The Republican Party has more to do with straws than I think the fast food industry does. But I know what you mean. I mean, these straw votes, I've seen the results. I mean, Rubio is very alive. Catherine, your thoughts on this?
I'm sorry.
okay. Catherine.
I can't.
I tell you what, we'll save you for the next thing, and I need to watch the switchboard a little better. I'm having to surf and look for the next thing. But segueing over to the general election, Kendrick Meek actually has been catching so many breaks lately. First, it started out that his financial disclosure was pretty strong. Corrine Brown was looking at running for their office or the nomination for Democratic primary. She decided not to. And then Ben Nelson this week endorsed Kendrick Meek for Florida Senate in the Democratic primary. That is the sitting senator, if you don't know that's who Ben Nelson is. Tim, is this thing over?
I think it is on the Democratic side. Looks to me like the things coalescing behind Meek. Like you said, he's catching all the breaks, all the endorsement. No other heavy hitters are stepping forward to go after him. I think that all the action we're going to be watching next year is on the GOP side, David. I sure do.
And that's another huge break. I mean, he doesn't have to fight. Catherine, what do you think about Kendrick Meek?
I think it's a great break for Democrats. Because,
yeah,
you know,
I mean,
we can spend these next months running.
Yeah. And for him, I guess, getting other parts of the state to know him, because he has run in one part of South Florida. Of course, you know, he's going to have some folks that probably think, oh, he's so liberal. It will be quite interesting. If Rubio gets the nomination, you're going to have a really right-wing candidate. And then you're going to have, then if Meek were to get, you know, gets the nomination on the Democratic side, I don't think he's as liberal as Rubio is conservative by any means, but he's, you know, he's probably to the left of Ben Nelson, probably to the left of Bob Graham. It'll be definitely a left versus right situation in a swing state like Florida. Tim, I find that very interesting. How do you think that might turn out? And, of course, we'll get plenty of time to revise our predictions.
Doesn't this remind you of just a little bit of the Virginia gubernatorial situation in reverse a little bit? Down there, you've got, I mean, Charlie Crist gets the nomination. He waltzes to victory. Instead, on the Republican side, you're going to have a hatchet fight. It's going to be a bloodbath for that nomination. While on the other side, you've got a candidate going around quietly, racking up endorsements, picking up money, getting ready to run in the general election and coming through relatively unscathed, which is essentially what McDonald did up there in Virginia. I like our chances better every day, David, is what I'm telling you.
Yeah, I mean, I think when they recruited Crist into this race, they thought, you know, this is a done deal. Crist will go from governor's race to Senate, from governor's mansion to the Senate. No problem, they've got it, and now it's going to be a place where they're going to have to spend a ton of money, and especially if Rubio wins this thing in the primary, they're going to have a big problem on their hands, because he probably can't win the general, and if he even were to win the general, he'd probably be just so unabashedly conservative, he'd kind of be an embarrassment to him at times, and in 6 years, he'd be walking dead.
And here comes
demographic changed dramatically.
And here comes those outside groups down there into this race, like the Club for Growth. Boy, there's a misnaming if there ever was one. And I'm sure Sarah Palin will be sticking herself into the thing down there, and it's just going to be a zoo. And they had a guy that not only was going to win handily, but Governor Crist could really help some candidates in some down ballot races. I hate to keep saying, what are they thinking? But this ideological purging thing, it's going to tear that party apart.
Yeah, it's going to be destined to be a minority party. It's going to be so interesting, because at one time I always thought the Republican Party would split into the Republican Party and the Libertarian Party. The Libertarian Party would grow stronger. But I think now you almost have like a militia crowd that's not exactly the Republican Party. They're not the religious right, and they're not libertarians by any means. And so you have almost like four groups fighting within themselves. Now, they're not going to split into four groups, but it's going to be interesting. It makes it so hard for them to come together with those four factions.
Whatever happened to the two words big tent? Whatever happened to that?
You know, it's just everybody wants their own pole and wants to take it somewhere else. And, you know, tent has four poles, and they stretch it out their way, and that's where the problems come. But
then they're willing to lose to make a point.
You know, that's the only thing you see over and over. We're going to talk about a race. outside of the South that Southerners have gotten into in just a second. But before we do that, Andre Bauer, the lieutenant governor, announced for governor of South Carolina, and he'd been toying around with that, but he finally made the move to do that. And, you know, of course, he had already said, you know, if Mark Sanford doesn't step down, then I'm going to have to make this move. Well, I mean, he's opened a bank account. He's moved his legal residence from one part of the state to another. I don't fully get that at all. I don't see why one would do that exactly. When you're already living in the state, you're legal to run wherever, whichever part of the state you live in. Tim, your thoughts on Andre Bauer's candidacy?
Well, I think this guy's pretty smart, David. We know what he did this past summer with Governor Sanford. He publicly offered him a deal. He said, if you'll step down, I'll serve out your term, and I will promise that I will then not seek a term of my own. And the voters said, hey, this guy has our interest at heart. He's above the fray. Of course, I think he was crazy like a fox. I think he knew Governor Sanford would turn him down, and then it would promote his own candidacy. I think this guy is a prohibitive favorite to be elected governor. I know there's been some questions like, you know, is he gay? And then there's been some things about some speeding tickets and stuff like that. But I believe that Andre Bauer is the next governor of South Carolina.
Yeah, apparently it's been proven he's a flaming speeder, but nothing
else.
What is it about South Carolina Republicans? Because these same kind of rumors dog Lindsey Graham.
Right.
It's just, hey, there's a big tent. You know, South Carolina could say, hey, in most states, the gay people are Democrats. Hey, we even recruit gay people in South Carolina.
But don't you agree that the lieutenant governor's move with Governor Sanford was brilliant?
It looks good. My goodness, it was so transparent. It's like saran wrap. You can see right through it. But I'm sure it'll fool enough of the people, enough of the time to get him a few votes, line him up some support. And I guess it makes him look like a good guy, whereas, you know, the speeding tickets, he's
right,
sure that may kind of help alleviate some of that. And I guess if we may just have time for one more topic, and that would be New York's 23rd district. Now, you're thinking New York, that's not the kudzu vine. But Newt Gingrich and Mike Huckabee have not gotten involved in that race and both caught heat for doing both things. But anyway, just to lay New York 23 out for you, there was a lady, Dede Skozafova, that was running for this open seat in New York's 23rd district, upstate New York. Apparently it touches the Canadian border down in the Adirondack Mountains. I have a feeling I was up there about a year ago when I was coming through upstate New York. Very rural areas. I think everywhere in Georgia seems like more than somewhere than most of those places. But it looked like a done deal. I mean, the district had never elected a Democrat in the current configuration. If you looked at basically that district and what it was like, hadn't had a Democrat since 1871. I mean, like, just years after the Civil War. I mean, it was a slam dunk for Republicans to elect this lady. But there was a conservative candidate, because apparently she's a fairly moderate Republican, even for upstate New York standards, if you will. And so this guy, and I want to say Owens, but actually I think that's the Democratic candidate. What's
right.
Doug Hoffman.
Hoffman's
Republican. Yep. He got involved, and then, of course, was a Democratic candidate, and each of them had somewhere around a third. Now, I'm kind of rounding a little bit. At times, some would be 26%, which we know is not exactly a third, but it would, you know, it'd be somewhere, you'd be in the mid-20s to 35% tops, and they'd all kind of trade around. Well, people jumped in. Sarah Palin, Tim Pawlenty, I think some others, all endorsed the conservative candidate, who was not the Republican candidate, Hoffman. But then Newt Gingrich got involved and said, oh, she's the party candidate. The party people up there said that that's their candidate, and that's who Republicans should back. And then, of course, Mike Huckabee said he wasn't getting involved in that mess, and people criticized him. Tim, your thoughts on the 23rd?
Well, until yesterday, we had a chance, I thought, to actually win the thing. The latest polling had Owens with 36%, Hoffman at 35%, and Skazafava, or whatever her name is, at 20 and fading. Fading to the point that she actually suspended her campaign yesterday. Today, she threw another monkey wrench into the works. She endorsed the Democrat in the race.
Yes, and they both think that he'll pick up a lot of that support. Is there enough there to pick up 50? Hard to tell.
Yes, it is. And interestingly enough, Hoffman, by the way, is not even a resident of this district.
Yeah, apparently, if people ask him about local issues, had no idea.
Yeah, and another thing people need to know about special elections like this, because that's what this is up there, when they have openings like this, what happens is that the county party chairs in each party get together and select the nominee, and her selection, because she's pro-choice, pro-gay rights, and was for the stimulus and stuff like that. It enraged the conservative base, and again, this Club for Growth bunch and people like Sarah Palin, here they all come running in there, and they backed Hoffman and saying that the Republican nominee was nothing but a Democrat and even more liberal than the Democratic candidate, Bill Owens. It's a conservative district, so I really think her leaving probably gives the win to Hoffman. But the Republicans are taking this stuff for a spin, David. They've done it there. They're doing it in Florida. I think these right-wing groups are going to do this all over the country. Somebody that's not Republican enough, according to them, they're going to go after them, whether it costs them the seat or not. We shouldn't be talking about this seat, should we?
No. I mean, it would be a slam dunk, and then you know, and then the DCCC to their benefit and to praise them, they got involved in this seat. They said they didn't write it off and said there's no way. There was a way that this guy Owens could be viable, and sure enough, a lot of it lined up. Now it may have turned a little bit on us, but I mean, it's still enough to fight. I mean, I don't see any way the guy gets under 40. That's one of my first predictions. I think this guy gets upwards of 40%. Probably one of the best Democratic showings in years in this district, but it's not going to be a win. I guess we better go in our last 2 minutes, and I hate it that Catherine's throat got the best of her, and I don't know that she'll be able to make her predictions, although she kind of gave us her big one, Atlanta. But, Tim, what's your prediction on New York 23rd?
New York 23rd, I think it's going to be a modest win for the conservative candidate, Hoffman.
Okay. Well, Tim, we hadn't heard anything on a prediction from you on the Atlanta mayor's race. Let's get that.
On the Atlanta mayor's race, I think it's a runoff with Norwood as the front runner and Reed finishing second, making the runoff and closing.
Yeah, and Tim, I can't agree with you more. I do think that the mayor's race is not going to be over, and it is going to be Reed, who has all the momentum right now.
Right.
Of he and Borders. By the way, Spikes, why do they keep – I mean, the fellow's a nice guy. Why do they keep inviting him to debate? He can't break over three or four, and he keeps, you know, getting invited to debate. If I was those guys below him, you know, there's like three or four of them, I'd be like, why can't I get in? I mean, what's the threshold here? And then I guess the last race that we must pick is the Virginia governor's race. I'll tell you what, I'll go first on this one. I do think the Republican – Our favorite Liberty University, you know, Democrat Bannon, McDonnell, is going to win. But it's not going to be by the double digits they're predicting. I think he's going to win somewhere close to 5. I think he'll win by closer to 5 than he will 10. It'll be a single-digit number. You know, I'll say like, you know, 6-ish, somewhere in there. Tim, what do you think?
I'm going to go the other way. I think he wins in 15 to 20 point blowout, and the GOP sweeps all down ballot races there.
Yeah, but see, I think that's what's going to hurt the Republicans, is that I think people, a lot of their voters may see it as such a done deal that they don't show up, And then I think that maybe like, hey, we can win some of these other races. The Democrats will have a little better showing. And you may have some Democrats that vote for attorney general and are so ticked off because of, you know, gun issues, whatever other issues they're ticked off at Deeds about, don't vote for him. So he may get a little bit of undervote that might cost him a point or two. But it'll be closer than people think. I just don't think there's any way that we can come back at this point. But I just see the Republicans as so dysfunctional right now. I just can't imagine when the economy comes back, what's going to happen to that bunch.
Yeah, really.
Yep. Well, that's been the Cudsey Vine, and I hope all of us can get to feeling better, particularly Catherine. And next week we'll have another show for you. We wrap up all these elections next Sunday.
See you then. Good night.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good, common sense, and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.